gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Experience Hockey Talk. Michael here, and you're listening to us on the WBGR Sports Network at WBGRSports.com and on the WBGR Sports app, which is available on both Google Play and iTunes. Links are up on the Experience Hockey Talk Facebook page for you for that. And of course, normally you'll be watching us on Facebook Live, but because of my commitments to AwesomeCon, this is a pre-taped episode. So for all of you on the Experience Hockey Talk Facebook page, you're seeing an exclusive video of me actually recording this episode. So while we are on the air, you can also watch the video of me recording this show. And of course, normally you would see Bernie. Bernie isn't here. So joining me from Full Tilt Rangers blog, Russell David. Russell, how you doing, good sir?
What's up, Mike? How are you? I'm great. I am great. And just for all the viewers out there, my last name is actually Russell Hartman. I keep Russell David on Facebook just for some personal reasons. So that's all I want to point out.
All right. Well, I had that on my thing, so yeah, sorry.
All good, man. All good.
So, you know, Russell, we have a very interesting thing ahead of us right now. We have, you know, we just had Game 6 in the Stanley Cup awarded. We have some New York Rangers news, which is actually the big reason why I want to bring you on the show this week with Dan Girardi being bought out. Plus, we also have the expansion draft that's happening next week as well. But let's start off with the Stanley Cup Finals, Game 6 in Nashville, the Pittsburgh Penguins going in with a 3-2 series lead over the Nashville Predators. And I have to admit, the first period was a very good back-and-forth period for both teams. I mean, shots were 9-8 in favor of the Penguins. Faceoffs were 12-7 in favor of Nashville. Hits were 17-8 in favor of Nashville. And on the power play, the Predators only had one and did not convert. Russell, when you're watching that first period, how much better was it to actually watch that period than seeing two more evenly balanced teams going up against each other?
Well, let me say something about the Nashville Predators, but like before I get into the gritty stuff, man, they have nothing to be upset about or said about this postseason because, man, they played their asses off in all four rounds. They brought it together. What their play reminded me of was reminiscent of the 2012 Los Angeles King run when they steamrolled everyone on their way to the cup. Man, that team shocked me when they brought it all together, but man, they were fun to watch. And seeing them fight for their basically playoff lives against the Penguins in that game six, man, it was something to behold. It really was.
Yeah. And you know, in my analysis for both teams, for Pittsburgh, it was an okay period for the Penguins. They came out hot the first 5 minutes of the game, but then cooled off, but they stayed dangerous throughout. For Nashville, it was a good period for them. They weathered that early flurry from the Pens and were able to settle into their own game. For Pittsburgh, what I felt that they needed to do was they needed to do much better in the faceoff circle, and they need to continue getting shots on net that are making Pecorine move around in that crease, because that's how they've really been getting a lot of the goals, especially with a lot of the screens that they put on him. In regards to Nashville's needs, the Predators needed to clean up their entries into the Penguins zone. The Preds also need to keep their cool and not get suckered into the post-whistle shenanigans, which for so, I mean, obviously you and I, both Metro Division rivals of the Penguins, are used to seeing all the time.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it, you know, especially between our two teams, the Caps and the Rangers, you see it. You see it between the Penguins mainly, you know, things happen. You see, when you see teams a lot, you know, during the course of the year and in the playoffs, you're playing the same team up to seven times in the matter of, what, 2-3 weeks. Tensions rise. Things get hot. Players get under your skin. It's no surprise that both teams are trying to bait the other into getting that one penalty or another, you know?
Yeah. And then we go into the second period, 1:07 into the second period, a blown call by the referee due to the referee being out of position cost the Nashville Predators a goal and the potential to take the 1-0 lead in the game. And then shortly after that, Connie Sherry was called for tripping. The period would end still 0-0. Shots were 21-19 in favor of Pittsburgh. Faceoffs were 26-11 in favor of Nashville. Hits were 20-17 for Nashville. And on the power play, Nashville was 0-2. Now, before we hop into the referee, because we want to talk about game one as well in a little bit.
Right.
the Penguins only won 4 faceoffs in this second period. 4.
Incredible. Like, faceoff is part of what drives possession. You need to gain the puck right off faceoff, because once you do, you have the puck. You can start to make the plays. The fact that it was still 0-0 with 2 power plays awarded to Nashville as well, man, that is, you can call it what it is, it's luck, but.
Well, I mean, not only that, when you look at Nashville trying to get in the zone against Pittsburgh, they had a lot of difficulty. They got some good scoring chances, but Pittsburgh didn't make it easy for them to get in the zone. And that's a key thing. You know, you need to get in that zone in order to, you know, generate those scoring opportunities. And I don't think that they're really able to do that because of how, you know, Pittsburgh without Letang and with the injuries that this team had, that you could see that they kind of went more into a defensive shell of let's try to keep everything out of our zone. And
yeah,
it worked.
Of course. I mean, Letang, he's in a class with someone like your Erik Karlsson and Victor Hedman when he's fully healthy. The guy knows how to drive the play. He's a crucial component of the Penguins being as successful as they have been over the past, 10 years now, since Crosby and Malkin have been on the team together, basically?
12 years.
Yeah, 12, over a decade that core of that team has basically been together. And when you think about, obviously, everyone knows what happened in Game 6, how the Penguins ultimately ended up winning, but the fact that they did that without Christopher Letang is huge, because that guy, when he is on, you can argue he's a top 5 D-man in the league. He's that good.
Yeah, and then for the analysis for the second period, this was another good period for the Pittsburgh Penguins. They outshot the Predators and had some quality scoring chances. However, Mike Sullivan used his time out, which was very questionable at the time. I mean, you know, let's talk about that. He used his time out in the middle of the second period. So it took away his ability to do a coach's challenge. And God forbid, if this game went into overtime, they don't have a timeout.
Yeah, game management is huge. I mean, the fact that he did that now, I mean, what can you say now? They won. I mean, if they lost, of course, you look at that a lot more critically. But, yeah, I mean, you typically save your timeout. Most coaches do for the third period, or God forbid if the game ends up going to overtime and players need a rest. But, I mean, Mike Sullivan, I think I read somewhere he's the first coach to go back-to-back Stanley Cups with his first 2 seasons with a team since, like, the 60s. Yeah, since Toe Blake, right?
If I reread it right, it was Toe Blake in 1956 and 57. There you go. With the Maple Leafs. So I was like,
that's
a good statistic to have in your side.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. Like, we see with these mid-season coaching changes, it happened before with Dan Bylsma, and it happened again with Mike Sullivan last year. The Penguins know what they need to do. They know who they have to hire. And ultimately, you know, Mike Sullivan, he knows how to get it done.
Yeah. And then going into the third period, the Penguins took 2 penalties, a tripping penalty on Olimata and a roughing penalty by Trevor Daley, which resulted in a 5-on-3 that Nashville could not capitalize on. Then at 18:25, with 1:35 left in the game, Patrick Hornquist would score his 5th of the playoffs, and a very lucky goal at that too, when he shot the puck from behind the net, hits the back of Pekarinen, and goes in the net.
It was definitely one of those things where I remember watching the game with a few of my friends, and I remember saying before the third period started, just based on how the game was going, I said to him, watch that goal. Watch whatever goal happens. It's going to be done by one of these gritty guys. You know, it's going to be something like a bank off or a tap in or something. It's going to be some of these gritty goals around the net. And I remember I said, I was like, watch it be Brian Rust or Hornquist, something like that. And what
so
do you know?
Jinxed it.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew it. I was like, it's going to be something like that because of just the way I saw the game going. And what do you know? Hornquist eventually ends up getting the goal, man. It was – and against a goalie like Pecorino to get a goal like that, man, that's brutal. It's just brutal.
Yeah. And, you know, with that, you know, Nashville calls their timeout. They try their best to get Pecorino off the ice as soon as possible so they can get that extra man out there. But at 19:46 with 12 seconds left, or 14 seconds left, I can't do math apparently now. Carl Hagelin would score his 2nd of the playoffs with an empty netter to seal the deal with your Pittsburgh Penguins. Well, not your Pittsburgh Penguins, not my Pittsburgh Penguins. Yeah. My friend Torrey Sipes' Pittsburgh Penguins.
Penguins.
Are now the first back-to-back Stanley Cup champions.
Since the 1997?
98.
Eight Red Wings.
Red Wings. When the Detroit Red Wings swept who?
Who did they sweep?
Washington Capitals.
There you go. I had to have you say that.
I was 11 and I'm still crying on the inside on that. But before we get into the celebration for Pittsburgh, there's one statistic I have to pop out, or two statistics I have to put out there. The faceoffs and the power play. Nashville was 0-for-4 on the power play. Pittsburgh did not have a single one. So Pittsburgh won this game without a single power play and by killing off four Nashville penalty power plays, one of which was a 5-on-3. That's huge.
Which is unbelievable that they killed that 5-on-3 off, because you look at who Nashville has. You have Ryan Ellis, you have PK Subban, you have Matthias Ekholm, you have Roman Josi. You got people like Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson and people like that. And you put that specific group of players on the ice, any one of those two pairs of defensemen, anyone, and those forwards, man, and they don't capitalize a 5-on-3. I could not believe that. I couldn't believe it.
And then the other thing is that, speaking about the power play for Nashville, one of the biggest things I was looking for was, where's PK Subban? PK Subban did not play a lot of power play minutes like you thought he would. And that, I think, is something that maybe hurt them. Besides in the fact that they couldn't get into the zone cleanly to set themselves up to generate opportunities for themselves. But the lack of PK Subban on the power play, you know, I saw him as a second on there as on the second unit. But that's a guy who, you know, in Montreal is a first unit power play bomber.
And I mean, you take a look at that guy's shot. Like, we saw it. I remember when the Rangers were playing Montreal in the Eastern Conference Final in 2014. Man, every time the Canadians had a power play, I'd be like, oh boy, here comes PK Subban again. And man, you got it. That right-handed shot from the point, that cannon, it's scary, man, to see that on the opposing team. It's something to watch.
But it was something we didn't get to see, though.
And yeah.
That's the thing that kind of bothered me a little bit. And I think, you know, if they maybe utilized PK Subban better on the power play, that would, you know, maybe suited them better in this series. So, but then my second statistic to look at is the faceoffs. Pittsburgh was brutalized in the faceoff circle. 38-18 by Nashville. That is a 32% winning percentage by Pittsburgh.
Which is crazy to think, because Crosby and Malkin are typically really good in that department too.
Yeah, and they killed the Caps in the faceoff circle. Like, that was something that I was griping about a lot during the second, not just the second round for the Caps, but the first round against Toronto for the Caps. Was, you know, you got to do better on your faceoffs, because without winning faceoffs, especially the ones in the offensive zone, you don't create the possession you want. You don't get the setups that you want. And Pittsburgh, with a 32% faceoff winning percentage, was able to pull off a really gritty 2-0 win. 1-0.
Yeah, I mean,
1-0 if you don't include the empty netter.
And you know what hurt, too, about Pittsburgh's final goal, which was even worse for all the Ranger fans watching, is, like you said, who scores that goal?
Carl Hagelin.
And Carl Hagelin was someone who, I forget if it was last summer now when that trade went down with the Ducks.
Yeah, it was the summer of 2015. And
15,
yeah,
so 2 years ago.
Yeah, Hagelin was traded to the Ducks, only to be traded to the Penguins, I believe, either before the trade deadline or at the trade deadline.
I think it was at the deadline or maybe a little before.
It might have been a little before. And he just tore it up in Pittsburgh, won a cup, and then wins another cup this year.
Right? I mean, as Ranger fans, I'm happy for Hags. We loved Hags when he was here. One of Hags' biggest goals when he was on the team was when he scored against the Pittsburgh Penguins in overtime in the 2014 Stanley Cup playoffs, I'm pretty sure it was. And, man, he was a great player for us. The dude is fast as they come. So, you know, I was happy for him last year. I'm obviously disappointed the Penguins have won two straight cups, but a player like that, it's nice to see him get rewarded.
The Penguins beat the Capitals 2 years in a row to get to it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, those are like some of the big statistics right there. Those two, the fact that, you know, Nashville wasn't able to capitalize on their power plays, and the fact that Pittsburgh had a 32% winning percentage in the faceoff circle and was still able to pull out. Those are the biggest things that really pop out to me. It's not Corsi or any of that other stuff. It's that stuff right there. Because that's where everything starts and that's where everything finishes.
So. Yeah, I mean, the whole Corsi thing, I'll admit myself, I'm not so versed in it. And especially one of the guys, basically the founder of Full Tilt Rangers. He's a guy, his name's Anthony Scultori. Shout him out right now. He's a great guy. He's one of the believers in the whole eye test. You know, he's not a big believer in the Corsi and everything. It's like, what, we can't measure everything by, you know, all these formulas and everything like that. So I totally get what you're saying with that, you know?
Yeah, there's four stats that I care about when it comes to the team. Shots, faceoffs, hits, and power play. Those four things are the most crucial things for a team. For a player, I care about goals, assists, penalty minutes, hits, and sometimes block shots.
Block shots is huge too, yeah. Definitely huge. And we're going to talk about one of the best shot blockers too in the league in a little bit too.
Yeah, and then for goalies, I really just cares about wins, losses, and how many stops he's making. So.
Yeah, I mean, what else is there to focus on, to be honest with you?
Yeah, so Pittsburgh defeats the Nashville Predators 4-2. They are your new 2017 Stanley Cup champions. They're your new Stanley Cup champions. Can we even say that now that they're back-to-back champions? Shouldn't we just say
they're the defending champs, I would say, at this point.
They are your repeat champions, the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Conn Smythe went to Sidney Crosby for the second year in a row, making him the first player to do that since...
Oh, you got me here. I want to say Steve Yzerman. Am I right?
Nope, Mario Lemieux.
Lemieux. See, we were talking about the Red Wings. I figured Yzerman. Hockey historians beat me up right now.
Yeah. But no, it was the first time since Mario Lemieux did it in 1991-92 Stanley Cup victories for the Penguins when they won their first two Cups. So I kind of find it a little ironic that happened, a little weird in my personal sense. So, because honestly, I didn't think Sidney Crosby deserved it. I mean, yeah, he was like number two in points or number three in points in the league in the playoffs. But there's this rookie kid named Jeff Gensel who tied the record for most points by a rookie in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And the big thing.
And what a playoff by him.
Oh, yeah.
What a playoff by him.
And I mentioned it last week on the show that the biggest thing about Jake Gensel is that he's consistent. He was consistent from the beginning of the series all the way up to the end of the series. He may not have been scoring as much later in the later rounds, but the thing is, though, is that you always knew he was out there. You always heard his name being called because he was on the puck. He was battling. Yeah. And to me, that is a Conn Smythe winner.
And if they needed a big goal, who was it? Supposedly it was Jake Gensel.
Yeah. And I personally feel that Jake Gensel should have gotten the Conn Smythe over Sidney Crosby.
So. I can't say I disagree with you there. I mean, the guy tied Dino Cicciarelli's record for most points by a rookie in a playoff. He was spectacular. I mean, I think he had a hat trick against Columbus in the first round. The guy had huge goals against Ottawa also. I mean, what can you say?
He had a couple big ones against the Caps. He had at least one big one in the Stanley Cup Finals.
He was spectacular. I mean, it's really hard to give an argument against him. I mean, and even last year, Crosby back-to-back, Conn Smythe. But last year, man, I really thought Phil Kessel got robbed last year because, man, he was on it last year when he was on that HBK line with him and Nick Bonino and Carl Hagelin. And they were killing it. And Phil Kessel was showing how much of a difference maker he can be with talented line mates. And I felt, a lot of other people did too, that Phil Kessel got robbed last year.
Yeah. And I agree. Phil Kessel was an amazing player in the playoffs last year, and he was when he was on, he was great, but there are times when you didn't notice him either this year.
Yeah, no, I agree. But Jake Gensel, or you can give a case for Evgeny Malkin even this year too. The guy led the playoffs in points. He beat out Sidney Crosby too.
He led the playoffs in points, but he was the same case as Phil Kessel. You noticed him when he wanted you to, and then there are times when he disappeared. And for me, it's about consistency. Jake Guentzel had that consistency.
Yeah, I mean, no arguments here, man. Jake Guentzel, I think he got robbed, but, I mean, argument the Crosby people make that feel like he deserved is his two-way play and how he sets everyone up and how he makes everyone better, and I totally get that. He is that kind of player. But when you have someone that steps onto a team, now I believe Jake Guentzel was even drafted in the third round, which isn't too late, but it's not someone that you're like, oh, he's going to be a bona fide NHL player. He steps into this role this year. He's a call-up from Wilkes-Barre Scranton, steps on a line with Sidney Crosby and Connor Sheary, scores 21 points in his first playoff run, and caps it off with a Stanley Cup win. You really got to take a look at that, because that is something to behold, man. Not everyone can just step in and do what he did.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we'll be doing more Serious Hockey Talk.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Thursday, June 22nd through Saturday, June 24th, the Dutch Family Restaurant is holding their annual Summer Pig Roast Weekend. Come to 12613 Wisteria Drive in Germantown, Maryland, and enjoy some amazing barbecue brought to you by the Dutch Family Restaurant. And as a special bonus, if you mention the Experience Hockey Talk, you will receive $1 off a barbecue pork sandwich. For more information and to look at Dutch Family Restaurant's regular menu, visit them on Facebook today.
I'm not sure that I can share. I'm not sure you care. From the outside looking in, we won't make it out of here. Can't hear, but you feel it. Feel it. You can't see, but you taste it. Taste it. All along the inside. One more step. Senses are misguided. You can't ignore me. I've become your own reflection. Slow down, take a moment just to breathe it in. You don't know what you got here.
And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the Experience Hockey Talk, Serious Hockey Talk for serious hockey fans. Michael Lindenbaum being joined by Russell Hartman from Full Tilt Rangers blog. And of course, real quick, we want to thank the bands Eyeshine and Crimson Orchard for their music that you hear before and during the commercial breaks. And ladies and gentlemen, we also would like to thank artist Eric Poole, who you can follow on Twitter at epoole, P-O-L-L, or P-O-O-L-E, 88, for allowing us to use his art on the show when we were on Facebook Live. Obviously, this show not on Facebook Live. We won't be able to use it, but we do want to send out the thanks to Eric. He does an amazing job with his artwork. So again, follow him on Twitter at epoole 88. So Russell, we alluded to it in the last segment that there was a blown call. Oh boy,
Now, pretty big one.
We were talking about this off air. Now we're going to talk about it on air. And we need to take a deep breath first. Just take a deep breath. Because this is going to get heated.
Oh, yes.
We know it. So, the thing is that in game one, PK Subban had the first goal of the series. Or so we thought. Mm-hmm. Mike Sullivan challenged the play, got the play called offsides, which it was not. And that game got turned around because the moment that goal got waved off, Pittsburgh scored three goals right off the bat. And that game changed to the favor of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Now we go back to game six. Nashville gets the first goal of the game a minute 6 into the second period when Colton Sissons dives and pokes the puck into an empty net. But the referee blows the play dead because he's out of position. He lost sight of the puck. That could have been the last goal Nashville scored this series, but it wasn't. And it's just so irritating, especially the fact that in Game 5, you had Wes McCauley standing right there in front of Sidney Crosby, slamming or pushing, I guess you could say, PK Subban's head into the ice, which, we have these concussion lawsuits against the league. Why don't we do something to stop this? Nah, it's okay. We're just going to keep it going.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Before we get into this.
Take a deep breath.
Yeah. Okay, so I get the note. I was watching game one. I was out with a few people, and I get that notification on my phone that the Predators have scored first in the final, and I was ecstatic. I couldn't believe it. I was thrilled. And I check the score on the NHL app, and I see it 0-0. And I said, that can't be right. I just saw a notification. And then I heard what happened. And then I saw what happened after that. Oh, boy. Well, I don't think that call was offsides. That goal should have counted. And, you know, it's so disheartening. And especially when you're in another team's building or you're playing a really tough opponent, when you score a goal like that and you think you have a leg up on the defending champs in Pittsburgh in game one to set the tone for the series, and it gets taken away off a call that shouldn't have even happened. Same thing with game six. You're fighting for your life down 3-2 in a series to the defending Stanley Cup champions. And a call like that goes down where the referee, this one hurt me even more. I bet it hurt the Preds. I can't even imagine what Preds fans and the team was going through because, man, an out of position ref, an out of position ref is the reason why the Predators did not go up 1-0. Matt Murray was out of position. Colton Sissons banked that into the net. There was nothing wrong with that play. Should have been 1-0. And, you know, calls like this and calls like what happened in game one are, you know, it's a reason why a lot of fans in the NHL of other teams, they don't like the Pittsburgh Penguins because they feel like the league and the refs are on their side and all this kind of thing and all these conspiracy theories. But when it comes down to it, it's just, man, those are two really, really tough calls. And the one in game six, I feel like there's no excuse. You know, it's game six of the Stanley Cup final. Possibly the last game of the season, and it was the last game of the season, and the refs miss something like that, it's ridiculous to me. And, you know, I've heard it said on Twitter, on Facebook, on a lot of things, well, Nashville was awarded power plays, and Nashville got more power plays than Pittsburgh, and they did this, and on and on and on. But let me tell you something. Mike, you play hockey, I play hockey. Oh, yeah. We know people that play sports. Yep. Your mindset changes when you go up in a game or if a game is tied deep into a crucial game. If the Predators – now, I'm not saying the Predators were guaranteed a victory if they're up 1-0. Who knows what would have happened the rest of that game if they score that goal. But I have been in championship games. I've been in playoff runs. I've gone through it with people. When you score that game-opening goal or you get a leg up on a team – your mindset changes and your play changes because you play a little looser. You don't grab your stick as hard. You're like, okay, we have a lead. Let's get that second one. The Predators didn't get that.
And I was mentioning that on last week's show when we did our 4:30 p.m. special where, you know, I was actually, you know, the last two seasons my team has made the championship game. We've lost both games. The previous game we lost 6-5 in overtime where we got the first two goals in like the first 2 minutes and then we just kind of, you know, I think we overlooked the game after that point, which is a huge mistake. And then last season's championship game, we lost 4-1. You know, we got, you know, or 5-1. We got our butts kicked, and it was a little disheartening. But like, you know, for me, I'd been on a, you know, me personally, I'd been on a scoring slump, and you know, it's that like that thing you just said. Holding that stick a little tight. You know, I remember talking to one of my teammates before a game, not last weekend, but the weekend before, you know, saying, hey, you know, I'm, you know, we haven't, him and I, we're kind of relied on to bring, you know, mm-hmm. the scoring to our team because we're the top four guys on the team in scoring. And we only have like 4 points each. And then we explode in that game. We explode in that game. You know, I get 4 goals and he has a goal and 4 assists. So, you know, we're back, you know, it's like, okay, we're back to how we're supposed to be playing. But the biggest thing we talked about was like, you don't change how you play. You can't change how you
exactly.
play.
Exactly.
And, you know,
and I'm not saying the Predators did.
And having that talk helps. And having those type of talks help, you know, before going into the game. It's like, hey, don't worry about it. Just go in and just, you know, just keep playing your game. Just play relaxed, and it helps.
Yeah. And I'm not saying the Predators didn't play the game. They played, I think they played a great game six. I think when they got back to Nashville for games three and four after going down 2-0 in Pittsburgh, I think they were a great team. But if something like that happens to you, like a back-breaking call like that, you know, you fight so hard all game to get that one opportunity. You know, you fight and you fight and you get it and you think you finally have a leg up and all right, they start to think in their head, maybe we can do this, maybe we can push this to seven. And it all gets ripped away from you from a call like that. It's unexcusable. It's unexcusable. Oh, it really is.
You know, the Predator players, you know, I remember them saying after game one that when the offsides call was made and it waved off the goal, that they didn't feel deflated. And it didn't look like that on the ice.
No, yeah.
They got it back. They got their mojo back in the second period. But the rest of that first period, they were not the same team.
Because sometimes after some of that, you need a reset. Like, I remember, you know, I've been in games where it'll be late in the second, early in the third, and the opposing team will get that goal, you know, the one that puts them up. My coach will take a timeout. He'll have us breathe. He'll just tell us to refocus. We can do it, and you go back into it. Sometimes you need a mental reset because, you know, it's a war out there. Hockey's a war, you know. It's not, you know, if you're on the ice, especially if you play out there, if you're a roller player, ice player, professional, anything, it's a game of emotion, and when something like that happens, your emotions take a dive at that moment. It does.
The moment you said that hockey is war, the first thing that popped in my mind is that first sentence in Fallout. War.
War never changes. Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, and it's true. You know, the wars are always the same, and it's like I've only won one championship in all the years I've been playing hockey.
Yeah,
and I've had those heartbreaking games trying to get into a championship game. I've had the heartbreaking moments in the championship games. I've been on teams that went winless an entire season, which are even that. You want to talk about tough? Be on a team that can't even win. You have all the right pieces; it just isn't coming together.
I remember I had a specific season. One season I played. I think my second or third year. We're not a good team all season. We had, like you said, we had all the pieces. We had some great guys, but for some reason during the regular season, it wasn't coming together. You know, kind of like what happened with the Predators. Playoffs came on. We beat the top-seeded team in the league. You know, it's a whole back and forth. It's like it's when you gel, when you come together. It's something to behold when it comes together.
Yeah, but we got to look at a lot of the other stuff that the referees were not calling. I mean, game five, things you can clearly tell got out of control. You know,
game five
really did get out of control. And really, that's because the refs didn't do what they're supposed to do at the beginning of the game. You know, people always go, oh, well, you know, the referees are deciding the games. You want to know how the referees are deciding the games? It's by not calling the stuff that needs to get called. Because if the referees call, like, you know, for Sidney Crosby and P.K. Subban, if they had just done matching minors, Crosby for roughing and Subban for holding, and not give Pittsburgh a power play, because I didn't see where a
power play,
I didn't see where a power play came in to play on that. Right then and there, you just set the bar and go, hey guys, we ain't going to take it. But instead, because a power play was awarded, I don't think that message got across to both teams. And as the game went on, it got chippier and chippier and chippier to the point where you had fights a lot. You had Carl Hagelin looking like Cousin It getting punched in the face. That's just how it looked like to me with all that hair. No,
it's totally okay, but I get what you're saying about with the refs, because they have to learn to call it. Yeah, that's what you're saying. Call it from the beginning. Call it right from the beginning. If it was coincidental minus, if they both went off, fine. Call it that way. You're setting the example. Neither of you do it again. And there's people that have pointed out that PK might have been holding Crosby's foot as well during that, but still,
like
Crosby was beating his head. Crosby's beating his head into the ice. You cannot do that, you know. And the fact that Pittsburgh got, you know, that was kind of like let go is ridiculous, because if I did that in my league, or even if that happens in something in the NHL or another time, that's going to get called, and there's going to be retaliatory things that come from that. You can't just do that to a star player, you know.
You want to know something? To quote my father, if the guy was wearing orange and black, that would have been a five, a game, and an automatic suspension.
Yeah, well, Can't disagree with you there with some of the calls that go Pittsburgh's way. And I already know some of the people listening to this may be like, oh, Washington Capitals fan, New York Rangers fan talking, but I guarantee you, talk to a Flyers fan, talk to a Ducks fan, talk to a Coyotes fan, talk to a Bruins fan, anyone else that sees this kind of thing that happens with Pittsburgh, you can see why a lot of people get angry at them sometimes.
Well, I mean, you saw it in the Cup Finals against San Jose last year, and you saw it again, you know, this year against Nashville. It's just, you know, there's something about Pittsburgh, you know, that everyone doesn't like. I mean, and it also stems to certain ways to how they play. Like in Game 5, Chris Kunitz should have gotten a 5-minute major in a game misconduct for charging on Matthias Ekholm.
Yes, I agree with you there.
Because he literally went from the faceoff dot in the zone to behind the goal line to hit Ekholm and was taking full-blown strides. That's a charge. Take more than 30 strides, it's a charge.
It's a charge. Garrett, that's in the rule book, no disputing that. Yes.
And then they get mad because Ekholm throws a little slash at, you know, Kunitz's ankles. And, you know, of course, the infamous water bottle being thrown on the ice. Yeah. You know, which is an automatic fine.
Oh, yeah, that he said he didn't mean to do. Yeah, okay.
It's just, you know, and the one thing I noticed is that it started in the beginning of the season, too. And one thing I would have to ask you, and this is something we're going to debate more during the off season, is should they change ice or not icing offsides to once the puck hits the blue line, it is in the zone? Because when the puck is coming out, you can play the puck on the blue line to keep it in, but yet you can't do that to take it in the zone initially. What are your thoughts on that? And again, this will be something we debate later.
Right. And it's a topic that warrants more debate. You know, I think, you know, I feel like they did they have the GM meetings ready or the coaches meeting? Because I know they do that. I think that's during the season, right, where they debate the rules.
Yeah.
They did that, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, my thing on the whole offsides thing is, okay, you go back to game one. Was the skate on the ice? Was the skate on the ice or was the skate not on the ice? I was playing a game yesterday and my friend Eddie put it a good way. He goes, if a skate's on the ice, if a skate's off the ice, is that one little inch gonna change what happened with that shot? I don't think so. The shot goes in. So it's just this whole thing. You need to look at it both ways. You need to see different perspectives, but it's definitely something that warrants a lot more discussion because it costs the Predators something that they really needed. And, it's just something that needs to be talked about more.
All right. And real quick for those listening who were originally watching on the Facebook page, and I'll address it when we come back, but my phone overheated, so we stopped recording on video. Oops.
Oh, okay. All right.
The battery apparently got too hot and said, "Nah, man, I'm taking a break." So we'll be back. And I'm going to use that as an opportunity to go, you know what? We're going to take a commercial break right now because I'm going to open the floor to you to talk some New York Rangers. And I do have a trade I want to announce on the show when we come back from the break.
Oh, great.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Thursday, June 22nd through Saturday, June 24th, the Dutch Family Restaurant is holding their annual Summer Pig Roast Weekend. Come to 12613 Wisteria Drive in Germantown, Maryland, and enjoy some amazing barbecue brought to you by the Dutch Family Restaurant. And as a special bonus, if you mention the Experience Hockey Talk, you will receive $1 off a barbecue pork sandwich. For more information and to look at Dutch Family Restaurant's regular menu, visit them on Facebook today.
I'm showing symptoms. I've got a sickness. I'm showing symptoms.
And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the Experience Hockey Talk, serious hockey talk for serious hockey fans. And real quick, as I mentioned on the audio version that everyone heard on WBGRSports.com, the video cut out. My camera's battery got too hot to handle the show. So I apologize to those who are watching on Facebook Live going, man, they just cut out all of a sudden randomly. So and as you can tell by the laughing, I'm joined by Russell Hartman from Full Tilt Rangers blog. Real quick, we're going to talk Rangers the rest of the show, but real quick, the Washington Capitals just made a trade right now. The Washington Capitals acquired Tyler Grovac from the Minnesota Wild for a fifth round 2018 pick. I will elaborate more on this on a later time, but I want to take this time to talk with Russell now about a major thing that happened today on Wednesday, June 14th. With the New York Rangers, which actually sent shockwaves around the National Hockey League, which is the New York Rangers buying out longtime defenseman Dan Girardi. Russell, why don't you fill us in with some more details on this and the impact that this makes on the not just the league, but mostly the New York Rangers.
So this news dropped. I was at work early this morning. I couldn't believe it, to be honest with you, because originally we reported on Full Tilt. We reported that GM Jeff Gordon isn't the biggest fan of buyouts. And this news was kind of shocking because, number one, neither Dan Girardi or Mark Stahl were asked to waive their NMCs on Monday before the 5 p.m. deadline. So to get that notification that Dan Girardi got bought out was really shocking. Now, what does this mean for the New York Rangers and the National Hockey League? Well, it means that the New York Rangers are now bigger players in the Kevin Shattenkirk sweepstakes now. It means that Brendan Smith is most likely to be re-signed this week and protected in the expansion draft. It means that maybe there's a deal in the works with Mark Stahl going to another team now since he wasn't the one bought out. It means that, you know, Nick Holden, something might happen there. There's rumors that Kevin Klein is thinking of retiring as well or finishing out his career in Europe. So this signifies what basically TSN insider Bob McKenzie has been saying, that the New York Rangers are going to be huge players this offseason because it's no secret that that team needs help on defense because, let's face it, during the Ottawa series, a lot of their defense got exposed. You know, when you're up by what they were, they had two-goal leads in Game 2 against Ottawa. It just, there were, throughout the whole playoffs against Montreal, there were bad plays, and ultimately it ended against Ottawa because the defense couldn't hang, and defensive deployments were not what they should have been. So, Dan Girardi, for people that don't know, for Caps fans out there listening, or other fans out there listening, Dan Girardi was a Ranger for 11 years. The man was an undrafted free agent, a member of the London Knights before he came to the NHL. You can't say more about the guy than that he was a warrior. Put his body on the line. The guy put his body on the line every night that he was on this team. He battled. He blocked shots. You know, he's one of the team leaders all time in playoff games played. He was a phenomenal player, but, you know, everyone slows down.
Yeah, and that was something that, you know, was noticed, you know, starting a couple seasons ago, that Dan Girardi's speed has gone down dramatically. It just wasn't a slight incline. It was a dramatic drop in his speed.
Yes.
And some can say the same with Mark Stahl as well, especially after some of the injuries he's had.
And I mean, Mark Stahl, a few years ago, a shot was deflected, and he got hit in the eye under his visor, I'm pretty sure. I don't even remember if he was wearing the visor, actually, to be honest, at the time. But he got a pretty bad injury, and he was out during a big chunk of the 2012 season and came back for the Winter Classic. He came back on New Year's Day when the Rangers played the Philadelphia Flyers at Citizens Bank Park. And Mark Stahl hasn't really looked like he used to before that happened. I mean, injuries happen, so it's not, you know, it's not like just suddenly the guy turned. It was, again, like Dan Girardi, it was a decline.
Well, the other thing that didn't help Mark Stahl was getting concussed by his brother Eric at the same time.
Oh yes. And I remember when the Carolina Hurricanes visited the Garden the season after that happened, the first time that happened, Eric Stahl was not greeted very warmly by the Garden faithful.
Even when he played for the team for a short period of time?
When he played for the team, you know, it wasn't very remarkable when he was here, but when he was a member of the Hurricanes, he was not greeted very nicely at all.
But, you know, going back to your team, to the Rangers defense, Girardi's been bought out. You just mentioned that, you know, there could be more moves on the way, or Kevin Klein being on the way out, hopefully signing Brendan Smith, the potential signing Kevin Shattenkirk, which I even said a couple weeks ago when you called into the show. I said that, you know, odds are, you know, Kevin Shattenkirk would be going up north. Although there was a report, I think by Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet, saying that Dallas is in the running for Kevin Shattenkirk as well. One thing is that, do you think Shattenkirk really is the guy to jumpstart that defense?
I'll say this about Kevin Shattenkirk. The guy knows how to move the puck. He's a right-handed defenseman. He's relatively young. He hasn't turned 30 yet. And an important thing to say about the New York Rangers is our captain is a guy named Ryan McDonough. Maybe you've heard of Ryan McDonough. Maybe.
I think I have. I don't know yet. Yeah. Can you refresh my memory on this one? Isn't he that guy?
He's that guy who, you know, the Rangers traded Scott Gomez to Montreal for, and Montreal fans still get upset whenever you mention the trade. So basically, Ryan McDonough has been, in my eyes, one of the best defensemen in the National Hockey League for many years now. About 4 or 5 years now, he's been at the top of his game. The guy is a workhorse on defense every night. Now, he's not an Erik Karlsson type player. He's not a Chris Letang type player. He's not flashy with the puck. But, man, he is tasked always with shutting down people like Alexander Ovechkin or Sidney Crosby or Getzlaff and Perry or people like that. If the top forwards are out for the opposing team, Ryan McDonough is out there fighting them. Now, one of the things I like to point out is that 65% of Ryan McDonough's 5-on-5 hockey-playing career for the New York Rangers has been played with Dan Girardi. Now, in the beginning, when Dan Girardi wasn't on this decline, when Dan Girardi was a solid hockey player and a top-two defenseman, that was a rock-solid pairing. They were great every night, in and out, but as the decline started for Dan Girardi, Ryan McDonough's been bogged down a little bit. Now, is Kevin Shattenkirk the answer on that side? Is he going to make the Rangers right back into that upper echelon? You know, I can't say definitively yes or no, but when you have a player of that caliber who can move the puck and shoot the puck and quarterback a power play like that, playing with someone like a Ryan McDonough type player who can now focus more on his defensive aspects and leave the rushing to someone like Shattenkirk, you have the potential for an extremely deadly top pairing, extremely deadly, who can do it all. They can shoot, they can rush it, they can defend. I mean, it's something that I hope we get to see in New York next season.
Well, how's this? Let's put on our GM caps real quick. The Caps still technically have the rights to Kevin Shattenkirk until July 1. And we'll trade him to you for like a first round pick because we kind of need those here in Washington. Oh, wait. That's
We need those in New York, too.
You don't have any first rounders either.
I believe this is the first year we're drafting in the first round since 2012 when we got Brady Shea. I could be wrong, but I believe it's the last time we picked in the first round. But I mean, if I'm GM Jeff Gordon and I'm really confident, I'm calling up Brian McClellan and I'm saying, look, I think we can get this guy. You know, I think relatively, what do you ask for? Fourth or fifth round pick maybe gets it done. I don't know. What do you think, Mike, for rights? I mean,
honestly, I would ask for at least second or third, because quite honestly, that's what the Caps ain't pick until the fourth round in this year's draft.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize you guys didn't pick in 1-3.
We ain't picking in the first three rounds. So if we can at least snag a second or third rounder, you know, I would be happy with that because, you know.
I mean, from a Caps fan perspective, yeah, I mean, that's, yeah. You know, if that works, like that works.
But not like that, but, you know, look at what the Caps also gave up for Kevin Shattenkirk. They gave up a young kid, Zach Sanford. You know, I believe we gave up a second rounder. And a conditional second rounder at the same time. So, like, there's other picks involved, you know. It's like, hey, if we can kind of get a second round pick back, you know, that would, you know, at least make it go, okay, we had him for the playoff run. He ain't going to re-sign with us. Let's at least get something out of him.
Totally. And I totally agree with you from that point, because if they know, they should try to get whatever they can, because, it'll all come down to how confident GM Jeff Gordon is in thinking that he can get Kevin Shattenkirk signed before he hits the open market. You know, I mean, it'll be a matter of feeling, because if Kevin Shattenkirk hits the free market, like you said, all along people have been thinking it's going to be the Rangers or the Bruins. But if Dallas jumps into the mix, or even if I remember someone point, one of the hockey insiders I read on Twitter this week even point out, what if Vegas wants to take him and maybe flip him even? You know, there's a lot going into it. Vegas has all the cap space in the world right now that they could use. So there's so many moving factors.
I hear a team in Arizona has a lot of cap space too, because a certain contract's finally expired.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, if it's about the money for Shattenkirk, he's got options. And there's not someone that's not going to pay the guy. But if it's about winning, I mean, then it's also a whole nother thing because, you know, the Rangers close or the Bruins close. I mean, is Dallas close? But the ultimate thing, I think, for Shattenkirk right now and from what everyone's been hearing over the course of the past year is, does he want to play for his hometown team? And if he's willing to, and if he's willing to take a pay cut, I think it gets done. With this Girardi buyout, I really think that they think that they have the shot to land him over everybody because Dan Girardi was one of the few right-handed defensemen we have on our roster, and you don't get rid of someone like that if you don't have a plan in place to replace him.
Right. Now, real quick, I want to touch base. With all these changes to the defense to the New York Rangers, could that be considered part of a rebuild for the New York Rangers? And if that's the case, what does that mean for Henrik Lundqvist?
Now, I mean, after they lost the cup final in 14 to the Kings, and I think it was five.
Yeah, it was five games.
Now, I thought if they did a rebuild, you know, that would be a pretty good time to do it. You know, St. Louis was older. You know, you had a bunch of parts that were moving off the team, like Brian Boyle and Anton Strålman, and they decided to just do the retool. Now, Henrik Lundqvist, I believe, is 35 years old now, or he will be next season, I'm pretty sure, one of those two. Now, I still think the man has left in the tank for at least three more years. I think you can give him a little while longer. Now, if you retool the defense in this way, say you start with, let's say they re-sign Smith and acquire Shattenkirk, you have a top four of Ryan McDonough, Kevin Shattenkirk, standout rookie Brady Shea, who I feel doesn't get enough attention from people around the league because he has stepped in and scored the second most goals of any defenseman in the Stanley Cup playoffs in two rounds, I want to put in, because he is spectacular, amazing prospect, and you put Brendan Smith on the side. So you've got top four. I think the Rangers will be really well on the defense next season, and a lot of people don't realize they signed an amazing – I wouldn't say amazing yet, but they've signed some pretty good prospects this offseason with Neil Pionk coming from – oh, God, I want to say Minnesota, I'm pretty sure, and Alexei Baraglazov coming over from the Continental Hockey League from Metallurg Magnitogorsk. And, you know, you have people like Sean Day.
You said that a hell of a lot better than I could.
Yeah, I've had some practice. And, you know, the Rangers last year, their first pick was in the third round in the 2016 entry draft, and they picked a man named Sean Day. Now, Sean Day is one of the few people in the history of juniors to get exceptional player status. Now, what that means is he got to enter juniors a year early. People that have that, I don't know, maybe people have heard these names, John Tavares, and I believe Connor McDavid was one of them too, and this guy Joe Valeno, who will be another one in 2018. He's going to be eligible next year. So Sean Day was a big deal when he entered juniors. You know, some things happened. He had some family issues. He fell off a little bit, but this year he got traded to the Windsor Spitfires, and they ended up winning the Memorial Cup, and he looked fantastic and started looking again like the player that a lot of people thought he was going to be when he was 15. So when you have someone like that, and you have Baraglazov and Pionk, and a guy even like Ryan Graves, who won the AHL All-Star Game's hardest slapshot competition a few years ago with 103-mile-an-hour slapshot, you got to give guys like this, these young guys who the Rangers have some openings on the blue line, you know, with Klein gone, most likely gone, and Girardi most likely gone, and Stahl and Holden looking to be moved.
Girardi is gone.
So when you have all this movement and all these young guys itching to do it, I mean, you got to give Hank and company I feel like they deserve at least maybe 2 to 3 more seasons to try it. And up front, I know we've been talking a lot about the defense, but the Rangers traded Derek Brassard last offseason for a guy named Mika Zibanejad. Now, Mika Zibanejad
player. Unfortunately, due to time constraints, we're not going to be able to talk about that, but we will save that for another time. We do have all offseason. So, Russell, thank you very much for coming on, being the special guest host of the Experience Hockey Talk this week. Real quick, why don't you go plug Full Tilt and how everyone can get check it out.
So I work on a blog called Full Tilt Rangers. You can find us on Twitter at Full Tilt NYR blog. Once again, that's at NY Full. Oh my God, I keep messing it up. It's at Full Tilt NYR blog. I work with a team of great writers, varied opinions. Everyone, we put out articles daily. We have polls on Twitter. All things Rangers. You know, any big news in the hockey league, we'll try to tweet out. And I want to say also, in just a few short weeks, myself, co-host Sean Taggart, and our first guest will be our site founder, Anthony Scultori. We will be bringing back Full Tilt Rangers Radio for all those fans out there, too. So it'll be a fun time, our first show all around the draft. Mike, thank you so much for having me on, man. I had a blast.
Yeah, no problem, man. And real quick, you can follow the show on Twitter at Experience Hockey and on Facebook at facebook.com/Experience Hockey Talk. Remember, no E at the beginning of Experience. And as always, we want to thank Lionel Green from WBGR Network for allowing the Experience Hockey Talk to be on the air. And until next week, we will see you. Actually, correction, until Tuesday night when we do our expansion draft special, we will see you on the ice.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Thursday, June 22nd through Saturday, June 24th, the Dutch Family Restaurant is holding their annual Summer Pig Roast Weekend. Come to 12613 Wisteria Drive in Germantown, Maryland, and enjoy some amazing barbecue brought to you by the Dutch Family Restaurant. And as a special bonus, if you mention the Experience Hockey Talk, you will receive $1 off a barbecue pork sandwich. For more information and a look at Dutch Family Restaurant's regular menu, visit them on Facebook today. Attention hockey fans, you want serious hockey talk? Then listen to the Experience Hockey Talk on the WBGR Sports Network. Join hosts Michael Lindebaum and Bernie Diehl as they review the past week for the Washington Capitals, NHL, and NWHL. You can listen to the Experience Hockey Talk at 11 a.m. every Saturday at the WBGRSports.com and on the WBGR Sports Network Facebook page. For more information, visit facebook.com/experience. Hockey Talk.